Well, aren't you a regular Nancy Drew?
I learned that from the Nancy Drew detective.
Okay, go.
You think you can follow the clues and solve the case of the missing condiment, Nancy Drew?
He knows, I've read every Nancy Drew mystery ever written.
Nancy, please tell me you're joking.
Wow, you suck at this Nancy Drew stuff. You should get a new hobby.
My name is Carson Drew, and this is my assistant, Nancy.
Nancy Drew.
It's curtains for you, Miss Drew.
Nancy Drew strikes again.
A regular Nancy Drew.
Okay, well, welcome everyone to episode 65.
Hello, regular Drews.
We are here today to discuss another Her Interactive Nancy Drew PC game, but instead, a Nancy Drew dossier. It is Lights, Camera, Curses. Exciting.
Yes, this was the first of two dossier games that they made. I know that it was their own special team that worked on this with Her Interactive, so I don't know how much of that team had previously worked on the other Nancy Drew games, the main series games, but I know that eventually they did form their own, like, little small team to work on these specifically. So they've got their own little set of lore to them, which is really fun.
That is, yeah, it's true. And it's definitely, they're definitely very different than the other ones. Of course, it's an entirely different game style. These are, I guess, technically classed as hidden object games. And there are tons of hidden object games out there. And I know that some people are huge, huge fans of those. And I love a hidden object game. I think I played the really famous ones like Mysteries of Huntsville or something back in the day. It's like an OG hidden object game. And they're really fun. They're really fun. And I think that this one is definitely a good game in that genre. I think it's done really well for that style of game. But I don't know that it's my favorite Nancy Drew game, you know?
As in compared it's to just, the rest of the right. games, or as in compared to yes. the other dossier? Okay, gotcha.
Well, yeah. Yeah,
compared I think to that the this other is probably Nancy the games. Better of the two dossiers, but
yeah, I agree. I think I agree with that. But it's definitely just, it just doesn't hold a candle to the other kind. But I think it's just because I'm a bigger fan of that point and click style than I am of this hidden object game style, you know?
Yeah.
Not that hidden object isn't point and click. It's still point and click. It's just a
right,
different
yeah.
type of game. Yeah.
It's still Her Interactive. It's still Lonnie Minella that voices Nancy, but it is ultimately, it is very, very different mm-hmm. than the main series game. So,
yeah. The art in it, though, I loved and was obsessed with the
yes.
art. So good. They did
beautiful.
So well on that. It's like this comic booky kind of style. And mm-hmm. It's because it's not – some of it is animated. They animated some of the characters when they talk. But otherwise, it is not animated. And all you get are these, like, comic book type style intro cutscene things that
yeah.
are so well done. Well, I guess they technically are animation. I guess I shouldn't say they're not animated. It's just a different type of animation. It's a cartoon
sure.
animation instead of the kind of 3D animation that we're used to in the Nancy Drew world. And so they did have some of that 3D animation, but in the cutscenes and stuff, most of the time it is just a 2D kind of graphic art comic book
yeah.
style, and it's just so good. It's such a vibe. It's like I don't know what I was gonna say there. It's just good.
It's great. Yeah, I agree.
Another positive for me is that this game does not take a whole lot of time to complete. It only takes a few hours to play. I think maybe it took me 4 hours at most, which is good, because I will say that the gameplay can get a little repetitive. And so it can get a little old if you play it for too long, but the game doesn't go on for too long. And so I think it just really hits a good sweet spot of that type of gameplay. And then also does get kind of significantly more challenging as you go on. The freaking crow puzzle. Trying to match all of the things because it's timed. Oh, hated that. Took forever for me.
I've got the box here. I'm trying to see if there's any sort of like age range listed on here. Not that I'm seeing, but it definitely does feel like a slightly younger maybe audience that they were going for as opposed to the main series of games. I would agree it gets a little repetitive though, with the style of how you play the game of like, oh, there's a bubble on the key and a bubble in the lock and you click both the bubbles and it puts them together and that's the way you unlock the door. And that's just pretty much how it goes the entire game. So they have to really get creative with like, you know, what objects they're putting together and how you use certain objects just so that it keeps it interesting and challenging. But it is kind of simple in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you want to give it 3 words?
Film noir? I don't know. Is that even
noir?
Okay. Yeah.
It's definitely gotta be noir.
We needed a Nancy Drew game that felt film noir, so I feel like this is really like filling a major hole filling in my heart that I needed. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. I also want to say, and this is a weird one, but like employment.
Okay.
Like it's very much about like who's working for whom and about like the power dynamics between employer and employee and who is Nancy working for and what it means to like work for someone and also how that can get complicated and gross, like dynamics.
Yeah.
And thinking about Ida and the director, and I think about Molly McKenna, and I think about what's his name? The producer, Arthur something, maybe just Arthur. I don't know if we get a last name. And then also, I think historically about employment. noir, employment, and then
I don't want to say like film set, production, cleaning. Nancy does a lot of cleaning in this game. Yeah, Egypt, yeah.
Egypt. There's a lot of cleaning in the game. You just have to clean up a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That's a weird part of it.
Nancy's the production assistant, so a lot of it is like, I have to clean up the set before I can actually start snooping and investigating. But eats up a lot of time with it. But Egypt works really well as a third word.
Yeah. Yeah. So the premise of this game is that Nancy has been invited to Hollywood by a movie producer named Molly McKenna, who is a friend of Carson's. She's working on the remake of a famous movie called Pharaoh. So that's where Egypt comes in. And then all kinds of accidents have been happening. And she needs Nancy to come help get to the bottom of it so that the movie can actually get made and she can do her job. And just an interesting part of this whole thing is that the setting of this game and of the set of the movie that they are currently making, remaking, is the set of the old movie that was turned into a theme park. But then that theme park is like, has since gone bust, and so it's like an old theme park that they have reconverted to a set, which is weirdly complicated.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
It was a little confusing, honestly. It comes back in later, you'll see, but it's just like, okay, I guess.
It felt,
I don't know.
Yeah, needlessly convoluted to me. When I think that we could have just made our way to the old set in a different manner, you know? Like, the fact that it's a theme park just feels kind of irrelevant, except for the fact that they maybe wanted to do that for, like, vibes of Nancy being in a theme park.
It doesn't really feel like a theme park just because there's, like, one or two things that we see. Like, oh, this is where the tracks used to be for this ride, but otherwise it just looks like a movie set now.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like if they had just gotten rid of the theme park aspect, it probably would have been just fine. Like, you're just using the same old set for some reason.
Her Interactive likes to have the, like, parallels with old mysteries running alongside the current mystery, and I think that it was just a convoluted way of forcing that, which didn't feel as natural as some of the other games.
Yeah, I think that what I would have done instead is probably instead of it being a theme park that went defunct, having it be just a museum, like the set turned into a museum, which is something that, you know, happens, right?
Yeah.
And so somehow Arthur came into possession of that museum, like maybe it closed or something, and he bought it. And so then they were also ended up using a lot of like the old props and set that was already there.
Right.
And I feel like that would have made a little bit more sense than the theme park conceit, but oh
yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Oh. But so the game is, like I said before, a hidden objects game. And the kind of tenets of the game is that you are supposed to find important objects on the screen and then use them together in some sort of way, like you were saying, Corey. Our goals are tracked in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen. And then we also get, like, these questions sometimes. So, like, when you're in conversation with people, you have to, like, choose the correct response to say back to them, which is interesting. I think a lot of Nathan Drew players will be used to being you can choose whatever response. As you want to, but you actually have to pick the correct response in this game. Otherwise, you can't proceed. Like, you just have to keep choosing until you choose the right one. And that is, and you can also earn points in that way. And you keep track of your points throughout the game. And if you earn enough points, then you unlock a special ending at the end. So we move through the game, you know, three different areas trying to accomplish our goals by finding and combining objects and collecting clues and then solving the mystery along the way. And there are also some random mini games thrown in here and there, drink making. And there's like this one where you have to like explode later on. Weird mini games. And also the, and there's also the,
match
mini game that you just do for points for no other reason, but just for points. Little random.
Yeah.
But okay. Do you want to start off our summary, Corey?
Sure. So, unlike with the main series games, these games are very prescripted in how you have to go about playing. You can't just, like, go to any location that you want and explore there and then, like, talk to people whenever you feel like. Things just kind of have to happen in a certain order. So we drive to the set in our convertible and we get to explore a little bit in the like main production, I guess, set area. We do also learn that a black cat has been wandering around set, just a stray cat. We talk to Molly, who is, you know, our contact here on the set. We talk to her through an intercom. And we have to repair a generator so that we can get her to like come out and talk to us because I guess she's very busy and needs us to do things for her before she'll help us with our mystery. Once we do talk to her, we learn that she is very stressed out because there's a lot of accidents that have been happening on set. She's been trying to just like keep things going, keep the crew working, trying to stay on budget, but these accidents have just been causing a ton of problems. She says that people think that the black cat is cursing people. Just whenever it wanders around, it curses people, and then that causes these accidents. So she says, if you see the cat, grab the cat so that we can make the cat stop cursing us. Or whatever. She also vaguely refers to something that she calls the Lois Manson curse. Says it's hanging over this production, that it's contributing to these accidents. But then our conversation is interrupted by the sounds of something happening on set. So she asks us to go get a prop from this pawn shop that's across the street and bring it back to set, assuming that there is still a set there when we return. Okay.
Oh, jeez.
So we go to this area. This is the old pawn shop area, but it's like, I think that this is part of what was supposed to be the old theme park because it does have some tracks going through it, but it looks like just this like old street and alley and old buildings. And then there's, you know, the area where the cars will drive with the roller coaster. I don't know where I'm going with this.
No, that's okay. It's a confusing set. I don't understand it either.
It's very strange. Is it like
inside or outside? It seems to kind of all be inside, but there are areas that look like outside. There's also like a body of water, but is that man-made? Is it fake? I don't know.
Right, because when we're looking at the map, it all seems to be under this production stage. So
yeah.
Who knows? But when we get to this old street area, we find evidence of an old movie production that was taking place in the same area. So we find this audio diary from someone named Z.B. Collingwood. And it's from 1936, from the shooting of the original Pharaoh movie. He talks about how great everything's going, how beautiful Lois is, how perfect this movie is going to be. And we also find notes that references the original Pharaoh movie written in rhyme with hieroglyphics on the bottom. So we got to hang on to that so that we can translate it later. Do you want to take it from here?
Sure. So we're going to go get this prop for Molly. It's a prop of an Ankh, an Egyptian Ankh. And then we see the black cat. He's like out in this area. And so we run after it, and then it ends up sitting on top of this detective statue holding a gun. Okay. It's like an animatronic statue. And so we have to like repair it so that it goes off and takes a shot and scares the cat. So the cat runs down because we're trying to get the cat, but then the cat runs off again. So we have to chase it again. And it actually runs into an office that is above the pawn shop, which we'll learn whose office this is later. And the cat is very unhappy with us that we've chased it up here. It growls and then it runs away again. But we're in this office, so we just decide to snoop in there, of course. Because why wouldn't we? We're in somebody's office. We don't know whose office it is, but we gotta snoop. And then we find another note, but this one's written today in modern day. And it was from someone named Jay, who is apparently the director of this movie, Pharaoh, to someone named Arthur, who is a producer of the movie. And it's some kind of threat. Jay says that he's from Australia and knows about deadly creatures. And he's upset because of how Arthur did something to make sure that he would be the one to direct the movie.
Hmm.
So it's really kind of vague and cryptic, but definitely threatening and scary, and mentions using deadly creatures to harm Arthur somehow. So yikes. And after we find that, the phone in this office rings. So we pick it up because we're stupid. Like, why? You're snooping around this person's office. You decide to answer the phone in here. Wild. And it's just like a mysterious voice that tells us that we need to get back to the soundstage because Molly is looking for us and because there's been another accident. And it's very mysterious, very spooky. Who is this person that called us? How did they know we were here?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. But so we go back to the set, and we talk to Molly again, and she tells us that the scaffolding that they had set up collapsed. Nobody was hurt, but she sent the crew home for the day so that she could, and Nancy could, look into it and investigate and see if they could figure out what caused it. We tell her about the call that we received in that office, and she tells us that that must have been Arthur Hitchens, the man who is financing the movie and also her boss. She tells us some background that he apparently bought the theme park and is producing the movie and hoping that it'll help like launch his new theme park that he's like building here and theming off of Egypt and the movie, right? Weird. Okay, interesting.
This is so bizarre. It was a movie in the 30s, and then they built a theme park of it, and then they were like, well, let's build on top of that another movie set so we can remake that movie, and then when we're done with that, we're going to put another theme park on top of the theme park movie theater theme park park.
Great. Right. And it's like, I guess all that infrastructure is here, so I can see why you would do that, but it just feels super convoluted. It's also weird because the theme park that was made after the original movie is like noir themed.
Yeah.
And like, why? Like, for what reason?
Well, and it did so well the first time. Why would we not put a movie themed theme park on the movie set?
Yeah. Because
people, you know, flocked to the first one so much that it, you know, fell decrepit and run down. Great.
Yeah, it's weird. Okay. Weird, weird choice. And after Molly tells us this, we start to investigate the scaffolding. We see the black cat again, and he runs off. But after investigating the scaffolding, we find another note that is like written in rhyme about the original movie and then has hieroglyphs along the bottom. And we can't figure that out yet either. So now we have two of those notes. And then on the scaffolding, we also find that some of the bolts that have like fallen off and out of the scaffolding that caused it to collapse were shaved. Seems like intentionally. So it doesn't seem like the scaffolding collapse was an accident. And then next to those shaved bolts, we find a costume bead. And so we decide we probably need to go to check out and try to figure out where that costume bead came from, because maybe they were responsible for the scaffolding collapse. And then we see the black cat again. Okay. Now that I'm discussing this, this is not great, is it?
No.
Oh, man. It's just the fact that, like, the cat is what's leading us from place to place instead of Nancy's deduction. It does lead us to the place where we need to go. But, like, why can't Nancy be the one to be like, well, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to choose to go do this instead of, like, chasing after this black cat constantly. It's kind of silly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we try to follow it, but then we have to, like, build a ramp. And when we build that, we find another note that is a prop list that a prop list from the movie, and, like, has, like, where those props are. It's, like, keeping track of the props. And next to one of the props that is a decoder, we see a note that says that Arthur Hitchens has checked out this prop.
Why?
I don't know. Interesting.
Very strange.
A very good question. One that I still don't have an answer to, Corey. and then, so that's interesting information. And then we follow the black cat to wardrobe, because it's gone to wardrobe. Very convenient that that's also where we need to go to check out the bead. So that's what we do. In this wardrobe room, we find an angry letter from the costume director who has quit. Because of all these accidents, it's kind of unclear if we're the first person to find this or if she quit a long time ago and the note's just still here. But that's kind of a funny a side note. We also find an article in this room from a journalist named Lydia Lynn, who's criticizing the actress playing Nefertiti in this movie, which is what the movie's about. It's about Nefertiti. And this actress's name is Ida Brooks. And Lydia Lynn is criticizing her for being too dumb to play Nefertiti, who was historically allegedly very smart. What a dumb criticism.
Right.
Like, an actress needs to be an intelligent or super intelligent to play an intelligent person. Like, that's not how
acting
works.
You don't need acting skills. You need real life intelligence in order to portray. Yeah.
Crazy. Anyway, okay. But interesting information to collate and collect. Once we clean up the wardrobe room, because like you said, cleanup is a big part of this, and we have to clean up the wardrobe room before we can investigate the costumes for some reason, we find that the bead that we found on the scaffolding matches those beads that are on the Nefertiti costume. Interesting. So could Ida be the one who's responsible for sabotaging the scaffolding? Potentially. Hmm. Also, we see that someone has used a screwdriver to scratch off Ida's nameplate on, like, her locker. There's, like, some lockers for the cast back here, and she has one, and someone has scratched her name off of it. So we have lots of really weird, conflicting clues going on right now. Mm-hmm. Someone has sabotaged the scaffolding, maybe Ida. Somebody also hates Ida. Lydia Lynn hates Ida. And Arthur Hitchens has checked out a decoder. And there are also these cryptic notes everywhere. And we're following this cat around. Things are weird.
Great start. Great start.
Do you want to take it?
So at this point, we run into Ida Brooks. She comes into the costume department. We introduce ourselves. And she tells us that she thinks everyone who's quitting the movie so far is just a wuss. She says that they're just being overdramatic and they don't really care about the movie enough. We do ask her about the costume and the missing beads, and she says, yeah, you know, the costume director quit, so no one's around to fix my costume, so I've actually been dropping these all over the place. We ask her about the article that we saw, though, and she says she's not bothered by it. It's free publicity, so why should she care? Because she just likes having her name out there. We do also learn, she tells us a little bit more about Lois Manson, who was the original actress who played Nefertiti in the original Pharaoh movie. We learn that on the movie set, she was bitten by a snake and died. while the movie was still, like, in production.
That is insanity. You're telling me that the lead actress on your movie dies on your set, and you still release that movie?
Yeah.
People
eat it
up. Scary. Lord.
We also ask Yuta about the nameplate that's been scratched out on her locker, and she says she doesn't know who did it, but it's obviously somebody who doesn't like her.
Thanks, Yuta.
We also ask her if she was on set when the scaffolding collapsed, and she says no. She was meeting her agent at the Casbah, which is a lounge in the theme park where you can get drinks and stuff. So she tells us that we should go there and meet George Jackson, who is the director of the movie. So we do. The Casbah turns out to be this dark, moody type of lounge bar. You can play a mini game there where you can make smoothies. In fact, you have to play the game before you can start talking to anybody. So you got to win the game. And then while you're playing the game, you can overhear people gossiping about all the accidents. They do also say that George Jackson's favorite drink is, what do they call it? It's like a snake bite or something like that.
Rattlesnake.
Rattlesnake, yeah. Doesn't matter. But if you bring him his favorite drink, basically, he will be more talkative with you. So, great tip. Obviously, that's what we're going to do. We get him his drink. We go over to talk to him. And he does open up to us. We confront him about his relationship with Archer Hitchens and the note that he wrote about the dangerous animals. And he denies any animosity between the two of them. Okay, very interesting. We also ask him about Yuta, and he says that she is a challenge to work with, but he likes a challenge. He calls her scatterbrained and says that she is scared of snakes, which is, of course, causing a lot of issues on this movie, because she has to handle snakes during the filming. He also says that Molly is the reason that they've been having so many accidents, because she's been cutting costs when it comes to production on the set and everything. So is she sabotaging her own movie shoot?
So weird.
So at this point, we decide to go back to Arthur's office and talk to him more about this. But he's not there. So we snoop for the decoder that he took, the one that was checked out on the prop list. At this point, we find another note from J.B. Collingwood to imply that he's left clues to something around the set. So could that be the notes that we've been finding with the hieroglyphs on them? Stay tuned to find out. we do find the decoder, though, and unfortunately it is not complete. So we have to use the notes that we found, the ones with the hieroglyphs on them, to decode the riddles on the notes. I think we have to clean up a little bit more in here for some reason, but then we decide that we should listen to the voicemails on Arthur's phone to see if we can find any more clues there. But we get caught halfway through doing this. So he says that he's the one who asked Molly to hire us, because he knows that we're a detective. He gives us a lockpicking kit to use. Thank you very much. All right. We can ask him about the old theme park as well, and he thinks that all the hype about the new movie and the legends from the old movie, which you take all that into consideration, he thinks that this theme park is going to be a hit, given all the buzz around it. Okay, fair enough.
I get that and everything, but I still think it's really niche. It's, way too niche to be a theme park. When you think about, really successful theme parks, Disney World and Six Flags. Six Flags, I think, is probably the most iconic things. They're based around entire franchises, right?
Right.
Disney isn't even just a franchise. It's just massive. But, Six Flags, that's Looney Tunes. You can't...
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other theme parks. I guess there's, Knoxbury Farm, SeaWorld. But this is such a niche, this theme park is going to be based off of one movie. All right.
Even, as much as I would love a Nancy Drew theme park, even that is too niche. And there are hundreds of Nancy Drew stories.
Nobody's going to go to that. I mean, 100 people will. But you need, thousands of people daily, right?
Right.
To make a successful theme park, so.
Yeah. Nobody's going to be interested.
No. Okay.
Very interesting, though. He does tell us that the real reason that he wanted Nancy to come investigate this, though, is that he's hoping to find the lost footage from the original Pharaoh movie. And that is because it includes footage of Lois dying after she gets bit by the snake. He believes
what
that the
hell?
Footage... I know. what are you going to do with this? Like, what use is this to you? But he really wants to find it, and he believes that it's hidden somewhere on the set of the original movie.
This is actually wild.
It is. He's hired us
to come here to help him find Lois Manson's snuff film.
Like, right.
Seriously?
Because it's going to make him more money? Or is he going to show it at the theme park? Like, what is
this? What is he going to do with it?
This is bizarre.
He doesn't actually ever say either.
It's not like he's like trying to produce the original movie because it's out.
Right.
He just wants to find the lost footage.
I think we're supposed to assume that it's because he wants to solve this decades-old mystery, but he never comes out and says that.
No,
that's why so Nancy wants to do it.
Yeah.
You know, but like, wild.
Right.
Wild.
He does also mention that he thinks that the accidents are happening actually not because of any black cat situation, but because somebody else is looking for the footage and is trying to throw everyone off or scare people away so that they have a chance to look for it. But then he tells us to go back to the hotel where everyone is staying and investigate Molly's room. So we do. We do have to do some savvy stuff in the lobby to even get into her room. But in the lobby of the hotel, we see the original movie poster, and it has hieroglyphics on it. So we use the decoder to decode it, and it says, "Find the Naja Haje." So what could that mean? But eventually we do find the key that we need, and we like fix the key card reader and everything. We get up to Molly's room, finally, and we are able to break into there. We get into her laptop, and we see that she's been researching the missing film footage. Because I'm sure Google will tell you exactly where it is. Great call. So we go back, we tell Arthur this, and he tells us, all right, this makes her a suspect. So we got to remember that. And then he tells us to investigate the prop room, which Molly keeps locked. So he says that he had to pull strings to get George to direct the film on the cheap because he is using all of his money on this park venture with this film. So he's had to do everything else pretty cheaply. All right. So next we go to the prop room, but it looks like someone has beat us here because it's been broken into and it's a huge mess. So before we can do anything, we have to, you guessed it, clean the room.
Clean up!
We had to put all the props away, figure out where everything goes, but then we can actually start investigating. And we find a chip from the hallway video camera just laying on the floor. But when we pick it up, we find that someone has forged a packing manifest to steal the flash boom that they're using for the movie. Interesting. But then we get caught by Molly. And she asks what happened here, and we explain that someone must have broken in.
So we ask her why it was locked in the first place, which is a bit of an odd question. Because why wouldn't you keep a prop room locked if you want to keep your props safe? Whatever. But she says she keeps it locked because she keeps flash boom in there, which is pyrotechnics. So that's like dangerous and she doesn't want anybody just to be able to use it. So she keeps it locked. Oh, imagine that. And we actually tell her, oh, yikes. Well, the crate with the flash boom in it is empty. So someone must have stolen it. This is not good. It's an explosive. What could they want to use that for? We also tell her that the scaffolding was sabotaged, that it wasn't an accident that someone shaped the bolts. We also tell her about finding Ida's bead by the scaffolding. She tells us she doesn't think Ida is smart enough to be responsible for that, though. But regardless, but regardless, we have this video chip that we found from the hallway security camera. So if we go watch that, then hopefully we'll be able to see who broke into the prop room. And maybe that's the same person who sabotaged the scaffolding. So when we go do that, we have to do like this mini game to get into the footage. But once we do, we see only that someone in a cape was breaking into the prop room. We can't see their face. Bummer. Oh, well. And that's kind of like the end of that first day. And then the next day, we head back to wardrobe for some reason, and we see that Ida has, like, stepped up the security around her locker. She's, like, literally, like, put, like, a laser grid, like, in the front
of
her locker. Why? I don't know. She didn't seem that bothered about the, you know, vandalism previously, but I guess she really doesn't want anybody getting into her locker. I don't know. It's funny. But we have to, like, figure out how to disarm those lasers and unlock the locker. And once we do and open it up, a live snake jumps out of the locker and almost bites us and then scurries off and away. Nope. Yikes. Okay.
Nope.
So like that. How did the snake get in there? There was literally a laser grid outside of the locker. So it doesn't seem like it was in there on accident. Seems like someone must have left that there. But after it leaves, we can actually look around inside of Ida's locker, and we see that Ida has, like, a creepy shrine to Lois Manson, the original star of the movie. We also find, like, an article with information about Lois, about her claims that people... about her, and this article claims that people believe she was actually murdered on the set. Like, her death was not an accident. Someone murdered her, which is intense. And this is honestly really dark for a Nancy Drew game, I feel
really
like.
It is, yeah.
even one that you kind of mentioned maybe could have been geared more towards a younger audience. This is, like, pretty serious. Also, this is a total aside, but the plot of the next Dossier game is also really super intense.
Right.
It's about a bomber who's, like, actively leaving bombs around the place. So these are this is high stress. Anyway.
But you're chasing a puppy around in the second one instead of a cat. So I guess balances out, right?
Ida also has a book inside of her locker that is about the Jewel of Karnak. And this was a jewel that originally belonged to the real Nefertiti and was somehow procured to be used on the original film set of the Pharaoh movie. And during the filming, that jewel went missing and has been lost ever since. Then we're interrupted by Ida, who just starts screaming, not because we've broken into her locker, but because she saw the snake that just slithered past. She tells us to catch it and put it in the reptile room because she's scared of snakes. And she says that's where they keep all the reptiles for the film. And at this point, for some reason, we decide to actually tell Ida that we're a private detective. I don't know why. I guess to, like, make her feel better about why we're there and why we're looking in her locker.
Maybe tell her before you have to wrangle the snakes and put them away so you avoid that. It's like, oh, you want me to do the snake thing? Sorry, I'm actually not a production assistant.
It's not my job.
I'm here as a detective, so I will not be doing that.
Of course it doesn't bother Nancy, though, Corey. Nancy can do anything.
No, I could not do this. Nope.
So we tell Ida that we're a private detective. We also tell her that we found that snake in her locker, which is concerning for her. And we ask, you know, like, is there anybody who hates you and would leave a snake in your locker? And she says she doesn't know, but she does feel like she's being watched all the time.
Oh.
Which is very spooky.
By snakes or by...
We also ask her about the Jewel of Karnak, and she tells us that people actually suspected that Lois took the Jewel of Karnak from the shoot. And then a couple days later, Lois dies from the snake bite. That's very mysterious.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So then we go to the reptile room to catch all the reptiles, and we find that, oh, not just the snake is actually out of its enclosure, but all of the reptiles in the reptile room are, like, out of their enclosure, and we have to, like, click on them all to get them back into their respective cages. Once we do, we find a note that's on the floor with familiar handwriting, but we can't figure out whose it is yet. We also see a swizzle stick from a rattlesnake smoothie, the only drink that George drinks. We find that on the floor. Fascinating. There's also a can of tuna in the fridge, which is weird to be in a reptile room. Obviously, reptiles don't eat tuna. Could this be for the cat? is somebody feeding this black cat that's around the set? That might make sense. I would totally do that. And then there's also a label on a terrarium that we notice after we finish cleaning up that says it's an Egyptian cobra. And underneath that, it says Neja Haje, which is the scientific name for an Egyptian cobra. So that's what the message on the film poster meant. Told us to find the Egyptian cobra. Must not mean this Egyptian cobra. Yeah. So something else, but at least we understand what that means. So we have to go back to the movie poster and actually take a closer look at the movie poster. And on the movie poster, there is actually an Egyptian cobra on it. So we have to look closer at that. And we find more hieroglyphs there. I don't know why we couldn't just find those originally. But okay. We find those and then we decode them with the decoder. And according to the decoder, they say DECDFA. Could those be music notes, perchance? Maybe. After this, we run into George. We tell him about the snake that we found at Nita's locker and the swizzle stick that we found on the floor, kind of implying that he might have been the one to put the snake in her locker. But he denies doing that, even though he says it would quote-unquote help her phobia. Dude, I do not see how hiding a snake in her locker to jump out at her would help her phobia.
It's gonna make it worse, if anything.
This is such a man being like, I can fix you. Just let me torture you. And that'll help. That's gotta help.
He's the expert. Science shows that if you do that to someone, phobias work in this way that it will make it worse. significantly worse if you try something like that. So love the overconfidence from someone who knows absolutely nothing. Exposure therapy
only works in a therapeutic setting. Yes. And needs to be administered by professionals, George. You are not doing that by putting a snake in her locker. Okay. Anyway. He does also tell us when we're talking to him about the rumor about Lois Manson that she was cursed because of a hieroglyph birthmark that she was born with, and that's why she died. She had like some kind of birthmark that was in the shape of a hieroglyph that apparently meant quote unquote literally cursed, and so
okay,
that's why sure. She was cursed and that's why she died.
Not okay. The cat thing, not the diamond thing. Sure, yeah,
right.
Not the snake.
Lots
thing.
Of reasons okay. For this lady to be cursed, I guess. We tell him about the prop room break-in, and he somehow seems to know that we're a detective and about the flash boom, even though we have never told him about those things, which is interesting. We catch him out and are like, we never told you that, and he awkwardly says that he just assumed that that's why someone would break into the prop room, because of the flash boom, obviously. What else would they be doing it for? Okay. Nice try, George. But so that's sus. So we decided to go check out George's room. Maybe he's hiding something. We sneak up into his penthouse and we see that he has a makeshift photography lab in his bathroom. So we develop some pictures from his camera that he has from film sitting around his room. And we see that he has been taking pictures surreptitiously of Ida. Specifically her shoulder, where she has like a weird S snake mark on it. So he's been like stalking Ida and taking a bunch of pictures of her. The hail.
So weird.
So weird and creepy. Do you want to take it?
Sure. So let's go confront this man, because that's bizarre. So we're on our way to do that, but we run into Molly and Arthur, who tell us that Ida is missing. Apparently she was supposed to meet them at the Casbah, but she never showed up, and Arthur now wants to go to the police. But Molly's just worried about the movie, because if they can't find her, obviously they can't finish the movie.
Yeah.
We also ask them why George would be taking pictures of Ida, and they say that they don't know. But George never showed to the Casbah either, so both George and Ida are now missing. And if he's, like, stalking her... That could be God. Very dangerous for Ida that we don't know where either one of them are. So we go down to the Casbah to try to listen to some of the gossiping patrons there, and see if maybe one of them knows anything about where Ida might be. We overhear that she might be rendezvousing with George down by the docks, near what they call the Nile Princess, which we'll learn later is a boat that they have docked there. We have to do like some more. I think there's another mini game, right? At this
we
point,
have to, like, in the Casbah. Shut down the the music, maybe. No.
Yeah. Okay. We have to do something like some sort of closing activity at the Casbah, but then eventually everyone will leave. And while we're cleaning up, because we have to clean up again, we find another audio diary from the ZB Collingwood. He says that the movie is beautiful, but Lois is a terrible, terrible actress. And he thinks he was just blinded by his love of her, and that's why he wanted her in the movie so badly. But, you know, now obviously this is becoming a problem. And now that he knows, he has to think of a way to spare Lois the humiliation of having this movie come out, and that, you know, people will judge her basically for her bad acting skills if it does come out. And he says he has to make sure that she's remembered for something other than her lack of talent. What? Sounds like a confession to me.
Is he gonna kill her to make sure that she's remembered for her death and not for her poor acting ability?
I think she'd prefer the hell being embarrassed that she's a bad actress than to be murdered and remember for having been murdered. Okay, great.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Grim. That is really, really dark.
Yes. This is a kid's game.
But anyway, enough about that. There's a piano in here, so we need to play the piano real quick. We play those music notes that we found on the poster, and Nancy realizes that the notes are from a song called The Nile Princess. Where have we heard that name before? That is supposedly where George and Ida went off to. So let's head over there. We make it down to the docks, and we listen to this little like audio tour thing that's like set up there that explains that the original set of the movie was buried underneath this theme park. They built directly on top of it, and so also the original blueprints were lost, never to be found again. But we poke around to the dock a little bit more, we find a waterproof box in the water that happens to have the original blueprints inside. Very convenient that they're so close to where we already were when we were looking for this. But they indicate that the famous final scene, the one in which Lois actually died, was filmed under this Main Street area. I don't know that we even look for Ida or George when we're here, but they're not here, so we have to go find a way to find the old set. There's this horrible, horrible thing.
The crows.
Like, match crows. I had to do this like 6 times. So,
I couldn't understand what I was supposed to be doing.
Same. It took so long to get anything right. Each crow has like a little thing on it that indicates a certain color. So, this crow might have like red eyes. So, you have to find it a red object that it likes. And this crow has like a gold metal thing on its ankle. You know, identifying which bird it is, and so you have to match it with something gold. Like, they all have a color, and you have to match it to something of the same color. And it's horrible. It takes forever, but
it's finally totally random.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with anything.
No. But we have to do this to, like, get the crows out of the way so that we can investigate more, but eventually we're able to find our way down to the old set. And down there, we find the missing flash boom. Someone maybe is using it as, you know, a detonator to excavate down here, which is, you know, super safe for everyone involved doing that. That's great. And there's also a locked sarcophagus, which needs a special key. All right. But at this point, we hear someone outside, and they come downstairs, and it's Ida. Okay, so she's safe, but she's shocked to see us. She tells us that she is hiding because she got a weird premonition that something terrible is going to happen. So she's just been wandering around, evidently fine, even though everyone's looking for her. We tell her that George has been following her around and photographing her. And, you know, so maybe that's why she feels like she's being watched. She says, even so, she thinks Arthur is more than likely the one responsible for the accidents because he's one of the most powerful men in Hollywood. And she mentions that we should go look in the safe in his office because he probably has something hidden in there.
Okay.
So guess where we're going next? In his office, he has another prop list. On the list, it says something about a Valley of the King's crate, and it has a bunch of question marks written next to it. So after we're done in the office, we should go look for that. But while we're still here, we're going to break into his safe, in which we find a set of bolt cutters and a phone number. We call the number, and it's the office of Lydia Lynn, that journalist who's been writing negative things about Ida. So why would Arthur have her phone number, possibly be in contact with her? That's kind of weird.
This is bonkers to me.
Right.
Sorry to interrupt. Just the fact that, like, we literally make it down into the old hidden set that has been built over. Ida's just like, actually, you should go look in Arthur's office. And so we just go?
We just leave, yeah.
We just leave? We just found the set. Why would we not be looking around the set? And also, we never find out why Arthur has that phone number. I don't understand. I don't think it's relevant at all.
Who knows? Just to throw suspicion.
Anyway. Sorry, continue.
No, it's just so bizarre. But then we're going to go look for that crate that Arthur had noted, the one about the Valley of the Kings. But whatever Arthur was looking for is not inside. There are blueprints inside. And we take a look at these blueprints, and it shows that there, in the original set, there's an Ark prop that's supposed to be on set. It's buried on the set, so we need to go and uncover it, and we do. And we have to unlock it with our hieroglyph key, and we, you know, translate everything. It spells out Egyptian cobra, unlocks it. So inside, we find a key that we're going to use for that locked sarcophagus that we found on the buried set. Then we get interrupted by all of our suspects who come over. We accuse Molly of putting the snake in Ida's locker. And we learn that it actually wasn't meant for Ida. It was meant for us. She knew the locker would be our next stop because we told her about the cloak on the video clip. So she did it. She's also the one this that let bizarre. All the reptiles out of their cages because she's afraid we somehow might keep her from finding the lost footage, so she needed to get us out of the way. She also broke into her own prop room and framed George with the swizzle stick. And she reluctantly admits all this, but claims that she is not responsible for the accidents and actually accuses Ida of that. Ida says that all she's been doing is feeding the black cat. She likes this whole, like, Lois Manson lore and everything, and so she wanted to, like, get the hype up around that and around the curse rumor that she kind of started because she told the newspaper about the accidents just to get more hype going for the movie. George also admits that he was taking the pictures of the mark on Ida's back, but only because it matches the mark that Lois Manson had on her that supposedly meant that she was cursed. And he thinks that it's a sign that the production is cursed. So obviously, if you think something is cursed, you should just take thousands of photos of it and just continuously be developing those in your hotel room bathroom. Sure. And Ida says that actually it's not like a birthmark or anything. Hers is a tattoo removal scar. And he's just an idiot and a creep for, you know, doing all that when he thinks that it's a curse when really it's nothing to do with anything. And then they all just, like, start arguing and devolve into this, like, yelling match until Arthur finally yells at everyone and then sends everyone off to bed like children. Then once they're gone, we subtly accuse Arthur of the one being responsible for the accidents, saying that he, like, made it so that no one would actually be hurt, but he would attract all this media attention just because of everything that's been going on. And he admits to it. He says that he did it just to try to secure his investment, but now he's worried that everything is just going to get out of hand and lead to his financial ruin. And now he thinks that lost footage of Lois is the only thing that can kind of, you know, save everything, get everything back on track, and be, like, for sure that he will make money on it. So that's what he wants us to do, is find it.
Lord, this is so convoluted. So he doesn't bring us back to he brings us here under the guise of telling Molly that we should come here to help investigate the accident. But actually, he wants us here to investigate the lost footage because he's trying to find that, and he's the one who's causing the accident. Why didn't he just ask us ourselves to come help him find the lost footage and not tell anybody about it? Why did he tell Molly to have us come here to investigate the accidents and uncover that, you know, that it's him? That makes no sense.
Otherwise, the story would have been a lot shorter.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, so I guess we need to go back to the old set, because where else would it be, I guess? Question mark?
Sure.
And we finally unlock the sarcophagus with the key that we found, and inside of that sarcophagus is a passageway that leads farther underground. So Ooh. We just climb on down this ladder. And the passage is actually blocked, but it's clear that someone here has been excavating with flash boom and trying to, like, get further into the set. So we just decide to do that, too. Nancy's like, I guess I'll keep working on this to try to get farther. And then we have to play this mini game where we, like, explode things, explode rocks, and have to combine, like, charges and explosives. Anyway, and once we make it through, we get into some kind of, like, large Egyptian room, which is full of, like, all this gold and sphinxes and a bunch of old props. And then off to the side, there is this room that's being held up by pillars. And we have to remove the pillars in the right order based on clues from another note that we find from ZB Collingwood. And then once we remove all of those in the right orders, like, light bounces and reflects off of mirrors and illuminates the top of the pharaoh statue that's in the middle of the room, and then the pharaoh statue opens its mouth. And then inside
of Where the else pharaoh statue,
inside of the pharaoh statue's mouth is a film reel, and this is the lost footage. There's also a note in there from ZB Collingwood. It says that he made a replica of the Jewel of Karnak and kept the real jewel for himself. And that he's a thief, but he's not a murderer. He didn't murder Lois Manson. And the original footage that is here and on this film reel proves it somehow. But so after we read that note, Ida comes up behind us. She has followed us down here. And she asks us where the Jewel of Karnak is. We're like, no, that's not here. And, you know, ZB Collingwood says that he took it. And she's upset because apparently the whole reason why she's on this movie is because she's actually trying to find the Jewel of Karnak for herself.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Great.
This was, okay, we gotta talk about this later. Anyway, she kind of alludes to the fact that this whole Ditz persona thing is a fake. Like, she kind of, like, really switches her personality. She's no longer kind of, like, talking in the same tone that she used to. She's, like, clipped and, like, much more, like, intelligent sounding than she was before. And she's actually, like, been planning this whole thing and even, like, manipulated the situation to get this film to be shot here so that she could search this location for the Jewel of Karnak. Wild. She says that this film is obviously, like, doing so poorly, like, you know, with the accidents and everything going on, but it could still be a hit if we were to die down here in a cave-in and the movie were then dedicated to us.
Interesting.
We got to talk about this later, too.
Yes.
And then she takes off and, like, runs out of here intent on, like, burying us, like, exploding more flash boom and burying us in this old set.
Thanks. Yikes.
So we have to, like, race out of here. We have to, like, race her out of here. And we have to do, like, a series of different mini games with the flash boom in order to, like, beat her out of here. And, of course, once we successfully do that, we manage to make it out. And Ida gets the publicity she wished for after all. But all publicity is good publicity, right? of course, she's vilified for, like, trying to, you know, get us stuck down here in this cave-in. And then we head over to the editing room to see this lost footage that's on this film. And we see that Lois didn't actually die. she like fakes her death by pretending to die on screen, and then she just gets up and walks off set. And that's why the footage proves that the DB Collingsworth isn't a murderer, because Lois was actually dead. This is so, we have to talk about this too. This ending yeah. is bananas. And then also, I guess Nancy just assumes and says from this that the director, Z.B. Collingswood, and the coroner were in on it, and that Edub must have been a spy or a federal witness or something. Or sorry, yeah, Lois must have been a spy or a federal witness. And so that's why she faked her death and vanished into history. What?
Okay.
Okay. But so that's what the lost footage shows us. As we, like, you know, wrap up the end here, we learn that Ida faked a nervous breakdown to avoid prosecution for attempted murder. And the movie, so you can have essentially two different endings here. If you scored enough, then you get a different ending. But if you did not score well enough, then you learn that the movie did poorly, and the theme park is going to be paved over with a strip mall, much to Arthur's distress. But George is happy about it, though, because he hates Arthur, because he essentially made him unemployable, and then forced him into the job of director because he couldn't find any other work. We also learn that Molly adopts the cat, which
nice.
is nice. But if you do score enough points, the special ending is you learn that Lois actually stole the real Jewel of Karnak from the director, and like hid it, I guess, on set before she fled. She didn't take it. She like stole it from ZB, who stole it, like stole it back from ZB, mm-hmm. and hid it in the set. And then Arthur finds it and ends up sending the jewel back to Egypt. And because of all that good press, then the movie ends up being a really big hit, and the theme park ends up getting built.
I like that ending. I like the alternate ending.
Yeah. It's obviously much better.
Yeah.
Weird that it's like this take backsy moment with the Jewel of Karnak. Like,
yeah.
ZB could have just not stolen it. It could have just been Lois who like stole it and attempted to like run away with it, but got caught and had to leave it somewhere. Right?
Right.
I just, what the faking of the death thing. So first of all, we find this footage, and this is footage that is given to us with a note from ZB that says, "This proves that I'm not a murderer." Could this not just have been recorded before Lois was murdered?
Oh, yeah. Of course it could have.
Like, could have just been footage from a previous shot of the death scene.
Right.
And maybe she had to go to the bathroom, so she got up and ran away.
And then
she comes back and then is murdered.
Interesting. Well, duh. Yeah, of course it could have happened that way.
So it's not proof at all. And the assumption from Nancy that the reason why she's faked her death, that this isn't, one, in fact, proof that she faked her death, and two, the reason why is that she is a spy or a federal witness.
Okay.
Why are we assuming that? Maybe she was trying to flee from her clearly obsessive and scary director boyfriend who was talking about killing her in a note.
Probably.
Like, geez.
Because, like, either of those things, if she's a spy or in witness protection, the last thing you want to do is draw attention to yourself by being a movie star. Okay.
Right. Why would she star in the film?
I would have really liked it if we'd, like, found something modern day that referred to her, you know, mm-hmm. later on. Like, maybe Ida's right. interested in it because she, like, found her old diary or something and realized right. that there's no way she actually died on the set. And then, like, Ida knew more yeah. about Lois than she let on because she's so obsessed with the role that she's researched Lois so carefully. You know, I would have liked to have something come back a little bit to indicate that maybe... Mm-hmm. Maybe she did, or I don't, because that was like 36, right? They say 1936. So I don't think that she would like still be alive canonically, but you know, maybe
she could be in like her 90s.
Right. Maybe she's just an old woman, or maybe we find evidence that, like, hey, she lived until she was like 75 and she did all these things while, you know, after she ran away from the movie, or, you know, just find something.
It could be kind of like Titanic, like, if, like, maybe Lois was always, like, accused of stealing the Jewel of Karnak, because she even, I think she was in that book, or I think Ida tells us that she was accused of stealing it, and then she died a few days later. Mm-hmm. But, like, if we find the Jewel of Karnak, like, maybe she's in hiding because people think she stole this priceless treasure or something, but she actually didn't. And so if we find it, and then, like, that's news that we could say that, like, and, you know, the daughter of, you know, her, or she is somehow still alive, or her daughter or something comes out and is like, no, my mom never died, or I never died, you know, like, I just didn't want to be harassed by you people, and I had enough money, and I was tired of fame and whatever, you know, like, that would have been nice.
I even suspected that maybe Ida is going to be revealed to be, like, the granddaughter of Lois or something.
Right, because of the birthmark
that.
Situation. Right, I mean, I guess she says it's not that, that it's a tattoo removal scar. But honestly, that's the weirdest bit, is that somehow she has a tattoo removal scar that looks exactly like the birthmark that was on Lois. Like, that's insane.
That is a little too coincidental for me. Yeah, but
yeah, no one. If I was George, I'd be weirded out by that too. I'd probably take a freaking picture also.
so creepy.
Yeah, this is bananas. Like, I'm sorry, this ending is just wild.
Yeah,
we also have to talk about the fact that, like, the amount of culprits in this tiny, short, little, quick game is too many. It's too many culprits.
It gives you whiplash.
So it's like, first it's Molly. Molly's the one who broke into the prop room and, you know, planted the snake on us. But then she's not the one who actually did the accident. No, wait, that's actually Arthur. But actually, we're not here to investigate any of that stuff. We're actually here to investigate the lost footage. So we go to investigate the lost footage. But oh, wait, no, actually, then someone who is trying to find the Jewel of Karnak is trying to kill us? Why? That we weren't even looking into that ever. Right. We weren't interested in the Jewel of Karnak. We were just looking for the lost footage. Just
we didn't even know about it until halfway through the game.
She's the one who told us about it. She's the one who had that information in the first place. What? Why? It doesn't make any sense.
That's so weird.
Also have to talk about the similarities between this and Last Train to Blue Moon Canyon.
Oh, the ending is basically a direct ripoff.
It's especially exactly the same.
Removing the of the pillars. Yes. And then what if you just so happened to die in a cave-in? I would be such the hero. Oh my gosh.
It is 100%. Sure. She's supposed to be Laurie Gerard.
Yeah.
And this is the end. This is the exact same ending. The pillars have little tiny hieroglyphs on them, and you have to pull them out in the right order because they stand for certain things.
Yeah. Same thing in Last Train.
Like, it's just exactly the same. The only thing that's missing is the lizards. That's it. There's even a letter from a kind of historical figure involved in this reveal.
Interesting.
It's not, who was it? Abraham Lincoln? No, who was it?
It was Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's an old film director. It's from the 30s.
Right.
So it's like,
Her interactive, the things about Last Train that made it so successful are not the same things that you've pulled from this game to try to make Lights, Camera, Curses successful.
It's also just crazy to me. It's insane because it's like you are making a brand new, like, attempt at a game series. And instead of making this the first one, the very first one that you're making, instead of making it original, you decide to rip it off a game that you made in a different game series?
Yep.
What?
It does feel a little bit like they took all these tropes and just kind of made a collage out of them and slapped some glue on it. And, oh, look, that all fits together so well. What if we combine elements of Last Train and Tomb of the Lost Queen and Stay Tuned for Danger and call it good? You know?
Yeah. Definitely. And just to be clear, so this game was released
2008.
in 2008, and Last Train to Blue Moon was 2005. So, like, right. It's a definite, definite ripoff.
Oh, yeah.
Of that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tomb of the Lost Queen was way after, but.
Well, yeah. But I mean, Last Train specifically.
No, definitely. And, yeah.
Like, there's no way that they were in production at the same time and then just so happened to overlap.
That's definitely not. Definitely
it's 100%
here.
A ripoff.
Yeah.
Which is just so crappy. It's so crappy.
Don't rip yourself off her interactive. Come on.
Like, we already have so many tropes that just exist in the Nancy Drew universe. You can't just pick any other trope. Also, for a plot device that is, like, super unnecessary. We've never even discussed investigating the Jewel of Karnak. Like, we could have just made it entirely something different. Like, it could have been Arthur coming down and to try to bury us because he wants the lost footage for himself and he's going to do something with it. Doesn't want anybody else to have it. I don't know. Could be something like that. Could be anything. Like,
everybody was the culprit.
Yes. Except George. Except George. Like, he didn't do the shit with the reptiles. The only thing he did was take a picture of Lois.
Yeah.
Ida. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all he did. And he is honestly kind of a victim because of the trashing that Arthur did to his reputation that made him unemployable.
True.
Like, golly. Yeah. So, like, in retrospect, when I think back to playing this game, I remember really enjoying it. When I played it this time around, I got annoyed and was bored. And now that we're rediscussing it now, I'm like, this is so bad. Like, clearly there was not a whole lot of thought put into the structure of this plot. I think a lot of thought was put into the structure of the game and the gameplay, and I appreciate it for that. I think it did a good job at the gameplay, actually, of the game. But if you don't enjoy that kind of... Yeah. But if you don't enjoy that kind of gameplay, then, like...
You're not going to like any of it.
The game's just not for you. No. Yeah. Yeah. So... Yeah, it's a bit of a fail, I feel like.
For what it is with the game mechanisms, it's cute, it's fun. Like you said, it's short, you can easily play it in one sitting, so I like that aspect of it. But the rest of it was a little bit weak for me.
So what flashlight score would you give this score?
Well, I think I'm going to give it 2 flashlights. Before talking about it, it was a fun game. Honestly, I do enjoy playing it, and so I feel like maybe I could have given it a better score than that, but after talking about it, I think that it does have its downfalls as well. I think it's just a 2 flashlight game for me. How about you?
Yeah, I would also give it a 2. I mean, I remember it more fondly than I think I experienced this playthrough, because even though I think it was somewhat of an enjoyable game, I still got really annoyed while I was playing it. Like, just like kind of like, okay, like I gotta get through this to get to this to get to the end and be done. With, you know, and like that's not a fun fun experience for a game. So like that combined with the the plot being all over the place is definitely gonna be a 2 for me. But I think I give it more than just like a 1. It's not completely terrible, because I think they clearly did a whole lot of work, and I think the gameplay and like the quality of the art, it's just clearly a lot of thought did go into the making of this game, and so I appreciate it for that. You know,
it's pretty too, visually. The art's nice.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's really cute, really super cute. It's just I think they definitely fell short in a lot of different places. So a 2, but that's okay.
Oh well,
on to the next.
Yes indeed, on to the next. If we can be excited about the next.
Oh, God.
Do you want to tell them what it is?
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of people will be excited to hear us talk about the next one. Because I know that this one has a whole lot of fans. And unfortunately, just neither I or Corey are huge ones of this particular Nancy Drew topic. But we are going to be covering the pilot episode of the CW's Nancy Drew show.
It's going to be an episode.
Listen, I remember really liking the pilot. I saw the pilot a long time ago back when it aired, and I remember liking the pilot. But I think once you start getting towards the end of the pilot and once you start realizing what the rest of the TV show is when it really started falling off for me and I really started hating it. So hate's a strong word. Disliking enough to where I do not want to watch it anymore. But I think there are a lot of positive things I have to say about the pilot in and of itself. Sure. So, yeah. So I'm excited to talk about that with you, Corey, and with all of you out there listening.
Well, then join us next time for the pilot of the 2019 CW show.
Yeah, we will see you then, regular Drews.
Right.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Regular Nancy Drew. Email us at regularnancydrew@gmail.com.
If you like this episode, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
You can also follow us on Instagram at @regularnancydrew and Twitter at @regularnd.
You can also support us on Patreon. Patrons at the $3 level vote on upcoming episode topics and get exclusive access to our Scoop Sesh series.
And all patrons receive early access to each episode as well as weekly bonus content.
And to all you regular Drews out there,
thanks for listening.